to get your silly on?
Well, I've got a cool story that I'm going to tell you in a minute, but welcome to the Gelfin Men. I'm Alex. With me is James.
Ahoy. That wasn't even planned. That just came to me. That's organic.
That's just how clever you are, I guess.
That's right.
Before we get started on the episode, just want to tell you to check out our website, themgelfinmen.com. We've got a lot more content up there, audio, video podcasts.
Picture podcasts.
Do we have picture podcasts?
That's not a thing.
Okay. I was going to ask you to explain that. Anyways, check it out, themgelfinmen.com. Also follow us on Twitter, at themgelfinmen. No underscores or anything. And, I mean, since we're going to talk about... we're going to talk about summer movies a lot today as this is sort of our summer wrap-up type of podcast. I gave out a very important award today. It was the Douchebag of the Summer 2012 award. just before we get to the beginning of this episode, I figure I'll explain this to you because I think you'll get a kick out of it.
Please do.
So my friend Dawson and I are driving around downtown.
He is a douchebag.
No, not him. These guys are way better. And there are these three guys like crossing the street in front of us in like, you know, shorts and like a white tank top. And it's all matching tank tops. And they clearly do a lot of like bicep curls and aviators, baseball caps, all that stuff. And on the back of these tank tops, it says, "I survived," and then, like, check boxes for, like, the shots, the beers, the girls. And then I see this rock star, pickup truck with, like, the rock star energy drink logo all over it and stuff. And it was across the street. I'm like, that's a funny truck. And then I realize they're walking towards that truck. And I'm like, oh, my God, how did they get douchier? They have that. That's their truck? And then... I realized it's not their truck. They're just going to take pictures of them in front of the truck, which was the best possible scenario.
I thought they were just going to like see if they could score some free stuff, but
nope. Just standing next to the truck and taking iPhone pictures. It was amazing.
It's great.
So I made Dawson stop the car. I got out and gave them the Douchebag of the Summer 2012 award.
Did they appreciate it?
They tried to chug it. It was not a drink, so they failed.
And then they tried to have sex with it without consent.
But yeah, now that we've got the most important award of the summer out of the way, I figured we might as well start the episode.
Not even movie related.
I've seen a rock star in a movie somewhere, probably.
You saw the movie Rockstar with Mark Wahlberg.
I didn't actually see that movie, but we'll say that there are energy drinks in that film as well.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. This episode is brought to you by Pirates of the Caribbean. Wait, why are you not using Jack Sparrow's theme? Change this immediately. That's better. And now, here are Alex and James.
Welcome back from the theme song. I'm still Alex. With me is still James, I think.
Still at it.
Yeah, okay, he's still here. What are we talking about here today, James?
We're talking about Pirates of the Caribbean.
Okay.
The Curse of the Black Pearl.
I only watched on Stranger Tides.
This is going to be awkward.
Yep. So, first of all, Penelope Cruz. No, I'm sorry. Continue.
And, yeah, I think as you said in the intro, maybe talk about kind of summer movies in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's exactly what this is.
Yeah. We enjoy the summer movies here, and we figured do a sort of summer wrap-up and by also allowing us to watch a pretty good summer movie from 9 years ago.
Yes.
So. And it's you had never...
No, I hadn't seen this one.
Yeah.
Or anything.
Did you enjoy it?
I did.
Yeah.
It's a fun ride.
Oh, I love it so much.
Yeah, it's good. And I realize I often say that when we watch a movie that I hadn't seen that it was what I expected.
Uh-huh.
This kind of was. It was a bit darker, I guess. I didn't realize It was PG-13.
Yeah.
And
it's also literally a very dark film. Like,
yes, that's true. Yeah. And I like Johnny Depp even more than I used to now.
Yeah. He is so good in this movie.
It's pretty enjoyable.
It's so... Like, every time I watch this movie, and I haven't watched it in a few years, but Like, I didn't love this movie when it was released. Actually, I really didn't like it when I first saw it. But then I watched it again a few years later and then watched it, like, every day for a week. because I was just like, what is wrong with 2003 me? He's a lunatic. This movie's amazing. And, yeah, no, like, I probably hadn't seen this movie in a couple years. And just, like, watching it again, I was like, he's even better than I remembered.
Yeah, it's a like, fun time.
Oh, God. So entertaining. Like, his intro alone is so great.
What's his intro?
Oh, when he's on his boat that's sinking.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I love it so much. And then, like, how he just walks right off the sinking boat right onto the dock. And then the guy, you know, it's a shilling to park your boat or whatever. He's like, let's say 3 shillings, and then we forget the name. And then just steals his money pouch.
Steal more money, yeah.
Just as he's walking away. Oh, I love it so much.
Yeah, and even when he's not, like, he's clearly having so much fun doing this.
That's an understatement.
Yeah.
He's having the best time.
And when he's not even the center of the action, like, if he's just on screen and other people are talking, he's just always moving and always, like, just inhabiting the scene with his crazy Johnny Deppness.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
His Johnny Depp.
A super weak.
Well, I'm out of notes. All I had was Johnny Depp.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
A sheet of paper with the word Johnny Depp.
Exclamation mark. No, I mean, I think, like, when you talk about this movie, obviously he's the face of this movie, even though it is kind of an ensemble movie, more or less.
Yeah.
He's the best part of a pretty good movie, but he's the best part by a long shot. I think pretty much everybody else does their job. I think Jeffrey Rush is amazing as well.
Yeah, he's good.
He's pretty great. The part where Will is threatening to kill himself so they can't use his blood on the coins or whatever.
Yeah.
When Jeffrey Rush says, name your demands. And he's like, well, I want Elizabeth to, like, well, yeah, obviously that one. Like, I thought that was so funny.
Yeah, and this is more of a Johnny Depp thing, but it's while they're talking to each other and he's making him offers. And he's like, and I'll buy you a hat. A really big one. And this pleases him sufficiently.
Yeah.
That I enjoyed as well.
Pardon?
That I enjoyed greatly.
Yeah. But yeah, no, this movie was, it wasn't expected to be a hit. I think it was supposed to, well, I mean, Pirates hadn't been doing too well at the box office. Not these specific Pirates, but Pirates in general. I think Cutthroat Island in the 90s was sort of something that scared a lot of people off.
Yeah.
That movie did not make a lot of money.
No, and this was a surprise for a bunch of reasons, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, the pirate thing, I guess pirate movies used to be big and then kind of had several decades of bombs, and then Cutthroat Island being, like, I remember before Waterworld, Cutthroat Island was, like, the joke of a really expensive failed movie.
Yeah.
Because it lost a lot of money.
Yeah. I guess that's what happens when you put Matthew Modine in a starring role.
And not even Gina Davis could save it.
You say that like she saves a lot of things.
My heart.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so there's the pirate curse. Like, that just hadn't been going well for a long time.
Yeah.
And as much as people other than 2003 you love Johnny Depp, he's not really a bankable star. Like, he's been in a lot of cult movies.
Yeah.
I think as an individual, people like him. And people enjoy putting up posters of him in a bathtub smoking a cigarette for some reason. That seems to be a really popular thing for people to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, people know him and people like him, but if you look over his career, it's not as though he's been in a lot of movies that made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, particularly up to this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the first, like, big thing that he's put in front of. I mean, Edward Scissorhands was a big movie, just, you know, that had nothing to do with him really.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I know he plays the title character. But yeah, no, that movie I feel like could have been a success with somebody else.
Yeah.
People love him in that movie. I've never seen it, but maybe rightfully so, who knows? Yeah.
Yeah. You probably
I don't like Tim Burton.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't like that movie.
Although every time I say I don't like Tim Burton, I have to point out how much I love Pee-wee, the first Pee-wee movie.
And Big Fish.
I never saw Big Fish.
Yeah, you probably like Big Fish.
Yeah. No, I've been meaning to watch it for over a decade now, actually. But
yeah.
So true. I assume I'll never see it.
And I guess this is also based on a Disney ride, which,
yeah,
you know, doesn't inspire a lot of confidence in people projecting how well it's going to do.
Yep.
And it was Disney's first PG-13 movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Well, Touchstone, if you're going to count those.
Yeah, exactly. It's their first PG-13 movie under the actual Disney name.
Yeah.
They would always just put out their more adult things under the Touchstone brand.
Yeah, like Armageddon, yeah. And then make delicious McDonald's McFlurries. Even Michael Eisner, who was running Disney at the time, was pretty apprehensive about it.
Yeah.
Just kind of what it was, as well as the budget. Because what was this, $150 million, $140?
Yeah, $140, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of money to put into a movie. Like, it's the first of the franchise, even though you
yeah, and,
the franchise at the time.
Mm-hmm. And that was sort of, like, as time passes, there's always the standard amount to spend on a blockbuster goes up. Like, it's probably close to $200 million now, but around then, like, $150 was, like, the biggest blockbusters spend that, you know?
Yeah, and that's what someone pointed out to Eisner, though, because he was saying, why, I mean, it's okay, we're doing this movie, why does it have to be so expensive, is what he was asking some people involved. But then they pointed out to him that this is kind of what their answer to Lord of the Rings and The Matrix would be,
yeah,
which were big franchises around that time. And that's the, you know, ballpark budget of those movies, pretty much mm-hmm. one of that franchise. So yeah, the argument kind of was like, look, if you want to compete with what are the big franchises right now, you spend this much money on it.
Yeah, that was Jerry Bruckheimer that made that argument to Eisner, I think.
Stand-up guy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, people were a little reluctant about it. And, I mean, everyone, a lot of critics and people whose job it is to predict how these movies are going to do, a lot of them just assumed it was going to be a flop.
Yeah.
But they gave it the subtitle, The Curse of the Black Pearl, like they mm-hmm. were hoping for a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
And how'd that work out for them?
I think there were sequels. No, wait, I can't play dumb. We've already referred to one of them. Yeah. It worked out and there were sequels.
Yeah. I mean, this was the 55th highest growing movie of all time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And cool. Spawned the fifth highest grossing franchise of all time. So that's, I'm going to say a success.
Yeah, probably. Probably so.
So this kind of bucked a lot of people's expectations and, you know, did a lot better than most people anticipated. But I have a question for you.
Ooh.
One of many, but...
I love being asked for my opinions. That's why I have a podcast.
That's exactly why you have a podcast.
I've got things to say, world.
Listen up, 12 of you. Can a Disney...
No, I actually convinced a 13th person last night to listen to us.
Yes.
So, hi, Charlene.
Hey, Charlene. Nice to meet you.
Yep.
My question is... Can a Disney movie with a $140 million budget be a sleeper?
It's weird. I think that we can call it a gutsy gamble.
Okay.
That definitely paid off. Yeah, I see. I'm fine with, for a blockbuster, I'm fine with calling this a sleeper.
A blockbuster sleeper, though.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
This is not the sleeper hit of 2003. That's for damn sure. You know, this isn't Napoleon Dynamite.
Is that the sleeper hit of 2003?
I think it was the sleeper hit of 2004.
Close enough.
Yeah.
Did you play a lot of Monkey Island growing up?
No. What is the Monkey Island?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I thought you would have heard this story. Nope. It's a video game.
Okay.
Also about pirates.
Okay.
And, yeah, this is seen as, like, a big ripoff of that storyline.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, there's so many things. I'll post the article if you want. It's, like, even down to, like, the visuals and a lot of establishing shots being the exact same, like,
really?
Screen grabs from the from the game.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So did you play this game? Like, was this a thing that people know?
Yeah, most people know it. I knew it. Most of my friends know about it. I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, well, maybe it just never translated to Ottawa or London or wherever I was living at the time that it was important.
A hit. It was a worldwide hit.
Okay.
Cultural phenomenon.
All right. Clearly wasn't that phenomenal.
Something like a phenomenal. Anonymous. Do you know the whole production history behind this one?
No, I don't.
Would you like to know?
Not really. Let's move on.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. No. I would like to know.
No, it was originally pitched in the 90s. I mean, it's been a Disney ride for decades.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you been on the Disney ride, actually?
I have been on the Disney ride, actually.
Did you like it?
Yes.
Is it?
I think. I don't know.
Is it much less exciting than the movie?
I think if I was given the choice of never going on the ride again or never watching this movie again, I would choose never to go on the ride again.
And that would be the correct choice.
Yeah. Have you ever been on the ride?
Yes, I have.
How did you feel?
It's entertaining when you're like six, but
yeah, exactly. I was a child.
I'd stick with the movie for sure.
I think I would still be more entertained by the movie if I was the same age going on the ride and watching the movie.
That's true. And the ride's like 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And you don't get to see Johnny Depp do a Keith Richards impression.
Fair. Fair. Another thing about, just before we move back onto that production history, when I was watching this, like everybody pretty much knows that Johnny Depp said he based this off of Keith Richards. He was just reminding me so much of like, Russell Brand when I was watching it again.
Oh, yeah.
Like I could totally see Russell Brand changing very few things about this performance and just killing it as well. Like he's so, I don't know, just like the way he just sort of prances around and is just there to cause havoc and stuff, which is the character that Russell Brand always plays.
Yeah. And he's always kind of just slinking around and moving side to side and never sitting still. Yeah.
Yeah. Continually just adding on extra layers of chaos. Another thing he reminded me of is there's this It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode where Charlie Day, I think, just yells out wild card bitches and keeps doing like crazy stuff. And that's sort of how I felt about Johnny Depp again. Like, just sort of like when people are having a conversation, he'll just slink in and be like, but how about this as well? And then like back away slowly or like literally like sort of just walk off screen in a humorous way.
He's Disney's Heath Ledger's Joker of 2003.
Okay, I think that's fair.
Is that enough qualifiers?
Yeah, no, that's definitely enough that nobody can disprove that.
Awesome.
But yeah, you were talking about the production history?
Yeah, so I mean, it'd been a ride for a while. I guess it was pitched in the 90s first to make this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I guess originally they didn't have any of the supernatural stuff, and it was just a straight up swashbuckler, as they say.
Yeah.
And so Disney kind of, They liked the idea. They weren't sure whether to make a big feature film with it or just to do a direct-to-video.
Yeah.
And so this is my understanding, that if they were going to do direct-to-video, they were going to use, for Jack Sparrow, your boy, Cary Elwes.
Why is he my boy?
Because you love him.
Okay. Do I?
I think you do.
I don't. This is weird. Like, we've both talked about how we don't particularly care for The Princess Bride. I've seen Saw. You know, does that make Cary Elwes my boy?
You love Liar Liar. You love Hot Shots 1.
Okay, neither of those things describe me at all.
Okay, these describe me.
Yeah, okay. So your boy, Cary Elwes.
My boy, Cary Elwes. Yeah. Or your boy, Christopher Walken.
That's my boy.
Which is exciting.
Yeah.
And then their idea, if they were going to do a big screen one, was McConaughey.
As Jack Sparrow?
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been amazing.
I would absolutely see that movie.
Oh, my God. I'm going to find the Black Pearl. All right, all right, all right. Can I take my shirt off, Gordon Verbinski?
And so I don't know if, like, Spielberg, I guess, got a hold of the script and was never attached to it, but he said he wanted to direct it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'll like these choices as well. Robin Williams.
Okay.
Steve Martin.
Okay.
And Bill Murray.
Who's that third guy? I don't know who he is.
Stop it.
Yeah. No, I like Bill Murray. I think it would have been a much more apathetic Jack Sparrow if he was.
He can slink around and cause chaos, though.
I know he can, but it would have just, like, there would have been much less movement, I think, in general.
Well, he did Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah, no, I know.
Just like.
In the 80s. He was a much more manic person in the 80s.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. So even if this is happening in the 90s, like, we get Rushmore in 98, you know, that's where Bill Murray's at in the late 90s.
This could have been his Rushmore.
Instead, Rushmore is his Rushmore, Max.
Yeah. And so that was the 90s. And then I think it kind of just tread water for a bit and then stopped.
Nice.
And so then when Disney wanted to do it again, they considered Christopher Walken again.
Nice.
Jim Carrey.
Not nice.
Not nice for you. Michael Keaton.
That would have been solid.
Yeah. He's so funny.
He's a funny guy, yeah.
When he wants to be funny, he's very, very funny.
Yeah.
And then they actually approached Robert De Niro about it, which I have a hard time picturing, but okay.
Oh, my God. That would have been a train wreck. Holy crap. That would have been so bad.
Disaster.
Oh, my God.
Let's suck all the fun out of this movie and put in Robert De Niro in his I don't care about anything phase.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But anyway, his logic was that pirate movies always fail.
Yeah. Okay.
So he you know.
So he attached himself to one of those other rousing successes he was in.
So he sat that one out. But then he went on to play a pirate in 2007's Gold Dust.
Oh, yeah.
Really made the right choice there, Bobby D.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I guess by the time they actually got down to writing the script that, or at least the original version of the script that they ended up going with for this one, the 2003 one,
yeah.
The writer had Hugh Jackman in mind.
Okay.
Which I think could be fun.
Yeah. Hugh Jackman's a cool guy.
Yeah. But I guess he wasn't enough of a bankable star by this point either, which, mm-hmm. I mean, they went with Johnny Depp in the end, which we've discussed wasn't exactly a bankable star either, but
yeah.
I guess he was just a bigger name than Hugh Jackman at that point.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. That seems sensible. I think still people don't, the average person is just like that Wolverine guy, you know? I still don't think Hugh Jackman is a name that's particularly well known.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's why the musical didn't actually come back when he declared it, so.
No one knows this joke.
I'm not going to stop making it.
Okay.
Oscars 2008. Look it up.
Look it up.
Or 2009.
YouTube it. I don't know what year did the musical come back. Oh, never. And
hashtag he was wrong.
And the last casting choice that I'm going to mention that I also like, that was done again because they just didn't think he was a bankable star, which doesn't make sense to me either. For Heath Ledger as Will Turner.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, he looks kind of piratey now that I think about it, though.
Yeah, no, he totally could have done it.
Yeah. So anyway, as we all know, they went with Johnny Depp.
Yes.
And he got an Oscar nomination.
He did.
That I'm going to go ahead and guess you feel is deserved.
Absolutely. It seemed totally out of left field at the time, and it was, like, it was weird. But, I mean, as I've talked about on this podcast before, depending in which order we post these Pirates of the Caribbean and Easy A podcast, either last week or next week, I've always sort of said I don't think people should be eliminated from award contention for acting just because they're doing a comedic performance.
Yeah.
And particularly when a comedic performance is as good as this, because he's so goddamn funny.
Yeah.
Like,
so he didn't get nominated for the other ones.
No.
Was he not as good in the other ones, or is it kind of just doing too much of the same thing, and if you didn't get it for that, you're not going to get it for anything?
Yeah, I mean, he is doing the same thing, which is still likable, but I mean, he's also doing that in movies that aren't likable. Everybody hates the second Pirates of the Caribbean movie. The third movie most people hate, I actually liked it, and that was the reason why I ended up rewatching this movie, because I was like, if people think this third one is shit compared to the first one, I was like, I must be all wrong about the first one, because I actually kind of like this third one.
I thought the third one was the one everyone hated.
Maybe. Like, yeah, pretty much everybody hates the third one, but everybody hates the second one.
Okay.
It's terrible. Like, I saw that with my whole family, and everybody hated it, which does not happen.
What's so wrong about it?
I think everything.
Oh, okay.
I think it was everything.
When they get everything wrong.
Yeah,
that's really bad.
No, and number four was just one of the most just perfectly mediocre movies I've ever seen in my life. Like, I remember none of it. Like, nothing stood out, and nothing, like, for good or bad reasons. I think Kathy Bates might have been in it, but I can't be sure.
That sounds like something you'd remember.
Kathy Bates was in it.
Okay. How about Orlando? Your boy, Orlando Bloom.
I think he's pretty decent in this, actually.
He has so many boys.
Yeah, apparently. No, I think he's pretty good in this movie, particularly like his first moment in the movie when he's waiting for Elizabeth's dad, Jonathan Pryce, to come so he can show him the sword. And he's like pulls on the candlestick and it like breaks.
Yeah.
I think that's really funny. I think he's super funny there. And just in general, I think he does a good job in this role. Like, it's a fairly simple role for the most part, but the parts where he needs to be good, I think he's pretty decent.
Do you enjoy his Johnny Depp / Jack Sparrow impression?
I think it's fine, yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Because it also works as, like, a Hunter S. Thompson impression for me, too.
Yeah, okay.
And that works for me.
Okay, fair.
And your boy, Keira Knightley.
Yeah, my boy.
Your boy. Having a bit of a departure and doing a period piece. Mixing it up.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, this was, I mean, a big part of why she's only ever been in period pieces, because, like, I forget if she, what was the other thing that she was in that was a period piece that was, like, a big thing that she was a lead in? I don't know.
Pride and Prejudice?
Oh, yeah, Bennett, like, Beckham. I forgot that was her first big thing.
Princess.
Pardon?
The Princess of Thieves?
Yes. Sure. No, Pride and Prejudice was 05. King Arthur was 2004. That was another period piece. And then more Pirates movies. Atonement. Yeah.
She's 17.
In this movie?
Yeah. That's not madness to you?
She certainly doesn't look 17 in that movie.
Yeah, she looks so much older to me. Not like you look old, just you look older than 17.
You look like you are well-established in your 20s.
Get out of here.
Like, you're not new to them. You have been there for a while, and you found a comfy seat, and you're going to kick it there for a while.
Yeah, for, I don't know, 4 more years till you...
until you enter your 30s.
And this is how time works.
Yep. It's all about chairs.
So, well-executed summer movie? Or perfectly
extremely well-executed. You forgot to mention my other favorite cast member of this movie.
Oh, your boy.
Yeah, my boy, the score of this movie.
Well, I was going to get to that. But we're calling that an actor now?
It's more my boy than any of the other people you've called my boy. Okay. You know why we're doing this podcast? Why I was like, hey, I want to do a podcast on this? Because the theme from this movie popped into my head, and then I just couldn't stop listening to it for a week. And I was like, I need to watch this movie. It has to happen. We're doing a podcast.
You talk about my boy, this music.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, Johnny Depp has to be more of your boy than this, because he's actually a boy.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Okay.
That's fair.
All right, what do you love so much about the music?
Jack Sparrow's theme is awesome. What is there a better modern, like, let's say post 2000, does anybody have a better musical theme than that?
Does any character have a better musical
theme?
Nope.
Exactly.
Incorrect.
Exactly.
Not.
It's just so good. And I mean, I think another reason why this movie works so well in comparison to the sequels is that it uses that awesome theme very, very liberally in this movie. Like, it's all over the place. Whereas in the later movies, they used it like once, you know, which is a huge mistake in my mind.
You wouldn't get sick of it, though?
No, God, no. Like, when I edit this podcast, I'm just going to play the theme music under it for the whole time.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. I'm not actually doing that.
Nice betting.
What?
Betting? Is that what this is called?
Betting? I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. Probably not if I don't know that.
Oh, la-di-da.
Yeah, shots fired. I don't know. It's just super great. It's a great theme. And just, I think the build of the music really works well in the action sequences. And yeah, just love it so much. I cannot understate how much I love the music from this.
Because it's kind of Hans Zimmer-y, as you say.
Yeah, well, it was written by Hans Zimmer. The movie's production was really rushed, so that's why he doesn't have credit, because he just sort of wrote the themes, and then Klaus Badelt was the actual credited composer on the movie. But yeah, it's sweet.
Okay.
I want to listen to it right now.
I think we've established that.
Yeah.
Well, I was just because you called it... in one brief email you sent me about this, the perfectly executed summer movie.
Yes. Yeah, I definitely think this is one of the best blockbusters as far as just being well done.
Yeah. Okay, like, so... What, we got
here are the ingredients. Let's put them together perfectly.
Yeah, like, well, the first 40 minutes... What are the ingredients here? We've got really good music.
Really good music.
Or best music ever, as you say.
Yes. A really great performance.
Boy. Johnny Depp.
Yeah. a really, really great entertaining performance. And also it's got that element of surprise to it. And that I don't think a lot of people going to see this movie were like excited about it. It was sort of one of those blockbusters that you see because it exists, you know?
Yeah.
And then when they got there, it's like, holy crap, this is really, really great. And it's really entertaining, and it moves really quickly. Like, I don't know, the way the first 40 minutes of this movie is constructed is just perfect. Blockbuster filmmaking, I think. Like, every element of it, from this movie doesn't have great action sequences, but it's got its moments for the action, and the stuff that isn't action is so entertaining that it's just, I don't know, it's got everything.
Yeah. So you're not crazy about the action, though?
No, I like parts of it. I like Jack Sparrow's first escape. I like Jack Sparrow's last escape. And I love when they take the interceptor boat. I think that's so funny.
Yeah, that's cool.
Oh my God, when they get that one boat, they try and take a boat that two people couldn't control, And then when the guards of that boat see them trying to do that, they come over and all board the boat. And then Jack and Will just swing over to the other boat and take that. And yeah. It's so funny. Particularly the way fake Steve Coogan says at the beginning of the scene, "That's the worst pirate ever." And then they top it with his second in command saying, "That's probably the best pirate ever." I think that's so funny.
Fake Steve Coogan.
Oh, come on, don't act like he doesn't sound exactly like Steve Coogan.
I didn't realize.
Yeah, that role was written for Steve Coogan, or at very least Steve Coogan's voice.
I can legitimately say that has never crossed my mind until now.
Well, you'll get there.
Yeah.
You'll see what I mean eventually.
Are you counting their first sword fight between Jack and Will as part of his escape?
I do like that sequence, actually.
Yeah, I like that sword fight a lot.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
And I thought there's just a bunch of... Like, I certainly don't love all the action in this movie either. I think it's cool because we don't see a lot of good ship battles in movies. At least not that I could think of off the top of my head.
Yep.
So when they're really right next to each other, just firing cannons really closely and swinging back and forth and sword fighting and stuff. I liked it. And I was happy about it.
Cool.
And, I guess when he comes back to rescue the, or to, when Will comes back to rescue Jack and then they escape together, I like that sequence too.
Oh, that's great.
Like, there's just a lot of fun stuff of like interacting with the stuff around them and, like, with the fight with Jack and Will, especially in the blacksmith shop, I thought there's a lot of that kind of stuff that was, like, reminded me of Jackie Chan, which is always a good thing.
Yes. Yeah. Always a good thing. Well, I mean, it's always a good thing to remind you of a particular rendition of Jackie Chan, I guess.
You mean the tuxedo?
I definitely do not mean the tuxedo. I was just reading about that movie yesterday, actually. That's super weird.
Why?
I'm reading a book about DreamWorks, and it was one of their... It was a big failure for them.
Do you like the effects in this?
Yeah. I mean, I think they're fine. I mean, they don't look flawless, but keeping in mind that it's 2003, I feel like they're probably pretty good. I really like the parts that involve the cursed pirates going in and out of the moonlight. I think they use that very liberally throughout the movie, and I really appreciate it because I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought that was good too. And that's kind of one of those things that you really need to work because it is kind of a big transition, kind of an emotional, supposed to be emotionally jarring when it does happen. So if it looks bad, it I think would really take you out of it. And I was like, oh, this is certainly passable. Good.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's funny, right? That's part of a good summer movie.
Yeah, absolutely. It's super funny.
Very funny Johnny Depp, but just a lot of other funny lines too.
All right, so you don't have any more notes about Pirates?
I have that it was directed by Gore Verbinski.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, and he reminds me of Michael Bay just reading about his career, but not in any other way at all.
But what?
He reminds me of Michael Bay just reading about his career, like getting started in commercials and music videos and getting a lot of love for his commercials and stuff, and then the transition big like blockbuster summer movies.
Yeah
Except no one knows Gore Verbinski's name.
Nope.
Okay. I just didn't know if I was the only one.
No nobody knows it. He's had a more varied career. Like, he did The Ring and I think he did Mouse Hunt. Remember that movie with Nathan Lane and Lee Evans and Christopher Walken was like a...
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, that was Gore Verbinski's first movie. He also did The Weatherman with Nicolas Cage, which I think is an underrated movie.
Do you know what he's getting up to in 2013?
The Lone Ranger?
Nope.
No?
Well, that'll come out in 2013, but you know what then he works on after that?
No, I don't.
According to my research, Clue the movie.
Clue the movie?
Yep.
Okay.
It's not specifically a remake of the 1985 Martin Mull classic.
Yeah.
But it's still a cool movie.
Okay. I don't know. Gore Verbinski's a weird... Because I wouldn't call him a great director, but I think he's really good. He did Rango as well, which you love.
Yeah.
Or liked quite a bit.
Yeah, I liked Rango. Yeah. Now he's just on a big Johnny Depp kick.
Yeah, well. I guess they're just...
The question is, which Clue... Is Johnny Depp gonna play
all of them?
I was thinking Professor Plum.
Yeah, no, Professor Plum would make sense.
And the Candlestick.
Yeah. So we're just gonna
Well, a quick thank you to one of our followers online, JP at Podcast Fanboy. I realized when we were talking about the music, I didn't give him a shout out for pointing out to me on Twitter that Hans Zimmer actually did write the theme for Pirates of the Caribbean, and Klaus was just sort of like a Rush thing, and Klaus Badelt had to take over after Hans Zimmer wrote a bunch of themes. So thank you to JP for that. You pointed it out, and yeah, I felt you deserve some thanks for it. But Pirates of the Caribbean, pretty great example of a summer action movie. Just a really, really well done version of a certain kind of movie, and that certain kind of movie is a summer movie. We have sort of come to the end of summer 2012 movie season. And yeah, I guess we're just sort of going to give a quick look back to the summer that was, because I feel like if we did a summer movie preview, we have to do a summer movie wrap up. So, James.
Yes.
Everybody wants to know your opinion on Premiere.
Everybody?
I definitely do, and I'm the only person on this podcast other than you that matters. So.
Very happy.
Yeah, best movie ever, right?
I don't know. Yeah, I was telling someone it might be the best drive-in movie ever.
Okay, that's fair.
Because I saw it in the drive-in.
Did you bike to the drive-in for added authenticity?
I did not, but I did wear my comically oversized chain belt.
Okay, good. I knew you would.
No, we've talked a lot about movie etiquette, and I would certainly never talk through a movie in a movie theater.
Yeah.
But in a drive-in, I feel, if you're with the right people, you can talk, especially yes. If it's the right movie that you don't, maybe don't need to pay attention to every second of it.
You take that back right now, James. You take that back.
Okay. No, it is, by drive-in movie, I mean fun, summertime, silly, laughable, yet still fully enjoyable action movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I don't mean this is like, I don't mean you should talk through it in that it's so good it's bad, because often it's just so good it's good.
Yeah, but it's like this very specific kind of good where they know they're not making a serious movie, but they're still kind of taking it seriously. And The Expendables 2 came out a week before Premium Rush, and I assume you didn't see it, right?
Correct.
Okay. And the thing that was terrible about The Expendables 2 was just how self-aware it was and how just so over-the-top self-aware it was. And it wanted to make sure you knew they were already in on every single joke. And yeah. The thing with Premium Rush was that it sort of trusted its audience to get, you know, what the idea going on was. And it's just sort of this really, really entertaining movie. And there's nothing great about it except for Michael Shannon's villain's performance, which is just... the best. He's so good. But
there are like, no winks at the camera because they're too busy running reds and killing pets.
Exactly.
And the villain's last name was not villain. It was Monday, which is way more serious.
Yeah, exactly. Bobby Monday is the most serious name. I love that nobody ever even called him Robert Monday. It had to be Bobby Monday. But no, it's just it's Premium Rush is just a really fun movie that. It's sort of the type of movie that The Expendables 2 wanted to be, but Premium Rush is just so much better, and I cannot recommend it highly enough. For people that listen to this podcast, you'll know, you know, you're the type of audience that Premium Rush is for. You're the type that has a sense of irony and can enjoy it. So yeah, I cannot recommend it highly enough for people that want a fun little 91-minute ride. You know?
Oh yeah, no, someone offered me. One of my friends was going to Premium Rush the day after I saw it, yeah. And I was fully committed to that idea, but couldn't because I had other things lined up. Wow. But I would absolutely sit through that movie again.
Yeah,
oh, if I sit through, I mean, put my hands up in the air and scream enjoy the entire time.
No, it's great. But other
and
movies...
Asaf Manvi playing his character from Spider-Man again.
Yeah, no, it was pretty funny. But yeah, he's very talented. Playing that character, I guess. But yeah, no, looking further back to the summer, just sort of, we're talking about the very recent past right now, but what was your favorite movie that you saw from this summer?
I know, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this, uh-huh. And it might be Premium Rush.
Really?
It might be, because Dark Knight Rises to me was a big letdown.
You still have to see it again.
I guess, but yeah, and nothing else really blew me away over the summer.
Okay.
I mean, Bourne Legacy was a slight letdown. It's not a bad movie, but it was just because of my appreciation for the Bourne trilogy. Okay. Probably stacked up side by side against Premium Rush as examples of a well-made film. It might be better, but I had such a good time watching Premium Rush, uh-huh. and that's how I rate my summer movies, as pure entertainment value. And
okay.
I think that takes the cake, to be honest.
Okay, fair.
What about you?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I feel weird sort of classifying these as summer movies, but like the majority of the movies I enjoyed the most seeing this summer weren't really blockbusters. You know, like Beasts of the Southern Wild, I loved. I think possibly my favorite moment in film that I actually watched this summer took place in Take This Waltz. I didn't love that movie, but like probably the best 1 minute segment I saw in a movie theater was in Take This Waltz. But it's Batman for me. I think if we're talking just like purely summer movies, it's Batman. And I love Batman, and I just want to be his best friend and hang out with him forever.
Well, it's a good thing you listen to this podcast and now knows your opinion about him.
Exactly. Well, he's clearly not an avid listener. This is the first time he's getting my opinion on him. But yeah. We have an hour and a half of why The Dark Knight Rises was the glaring disappointment. But was there any sort of like thing you were specifically disappointed by other than Batman, or perhaps something that you felt was like a pleasant surprise?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we've talked about Spider-Man again too, and it was a little disappointing.
Yeah.
Oh, again, definitely. great in spots and not good enough in others to make me fully happy.
Not good enough is very, very kind words for the fucking terrible moments in The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, Avengers didn't rock my world either.
Mm-hmm. I seem to remember you being pleasantly surprised with The Avengers, though.
Yeah, but as time passes and as I reflect on it, it gets even worse in my head. So I don't know if that's a fair assessment, but...
Hold on, just real quick. I love the idea, the mental image of you hanging out in a nice little chair, wearing an ascot, drinking a scotch, and sitting back and reflecting about The Avengers. I really think Joss could have used the Tesseract in a better way.
I like to picture it as me starting off with like a smile on my face and then just like, no, no, shit, no, no, and then throwing my scotch onto the ground and then stomping my ascot. Fuck that hole.
I could not wear this ascot in a world where I do not think The Avengers is good. When I still thought The Avengers was good, I could wear this ascot with pride. Because it's a very pro-ascot piece of filmmaking.
Hey, nice ascot, man. Avengers was good, right? Wait a minute.
Yeah.
It was not ascot worthy at all. Is there any, like... trend that you see for summer 2012? Like, is this going to be the summer of anything? Is there going to be a big black backlash in 2013? Like, there was too much of this or not enough of this in 2012, and you know, to make up for it? Or is it just kind of your regular hodgepodge of summer movie?
Yeah, it didn't feel like there was anything really that really stuck out, I guess. No, I don't think... I didn't really see a particular trend. It felt like the average summer, like right down to the times when movies were released. Like everything felt like it was where it should be. You know what I mean? Like Premium Rush coming out on August 24th. You know, that's the only time it makes sense. Batman coming out in the release date Christopher Nolan is sort of used for his last three movies. Marvel putting out a movie at the beginning of May. Just Spider-Man on July 4th weekend. You know, like all of these things just sort of felt normal, you know, and having the one or two token indie movies that I really liked in the summer. But yeah, I don't know. Was there any, I guess the only comedy that really came out this summer was Ted, right? Is there anything I'm forgetting?
I don't think anything big.
Yeah. We've already talked about Ted on a minisode, but,
yeah. Well, someone was asking me about what I'm excited for the fall season and how kind of, award season is shaping up, because after the big studio summer blockbuster actiony popcorn fest that is summer, we get fall and winter right into award season.
Yes. So would you like to answer that person's question?
No.
No? Okay.
That's right. What I told them.
Okay. I'm going to answer it then.
Feel free.
Really interesting. Okay. I'm really interested in The Master. We'll be doing a full podcast on that when it comes out. Looper, of course, Rian Johnson's new movie. Hopefully Terrence Malick's new movie, To the Glory, I think it's called, will come out. It's definitely going to Venice and TIFF for the film festivals. Hopefully it comes out by the end of the year in theater so that I can see it and enjoy the visuals and maybe not the script. But yeah, those are the things I'm really looking forward to, like people I'm already interested in. And every September there are one or two movies that aren't necessarily expected to be good that end up being good. Like examples in the past that I remember really loving that came out in September are things like, well, Drive last year, and 50-50 sort of fell into that as well. Easy A in 2010, 310 to Yuma in 2007. You know, there's always sort of like really good examples of genre movies coming out in September. Just sort of things that don't feel like everybody in the public would love, but are sort of aimed specifically like at people like us that watch a lot of movies and just really enjoy a really good execution of something.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of that transition between this is going to be this is what we hope is a good blockbuster that we're going to make a bunch of money on.
Yeah.
And like between that and the winter season and I guess more autumn, where this is what we really, these are prestige movies. This is what we really think is going to pull in some awards for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what you're saying, right? September's kind of that sweet spot where you can sneak things in that aren't guaranteed, but aren't, you know, too heavy with, you know, award bagging, Oscar bait.
Yeah, exactly. And September's sort of...
like Lawless.
Yeah, Lawless, which I haven't seen yet. I'm really excited to see.
No, I haven't seen it either, but I have like weirdly high hopes for it. And mm-hmm. there are some big names involved, but it doesn't feel like let's put this together and get an Oscar, but it's not quite as fun to be a summer movie.
Yeah, and it was also one of those movies that was delayed for a long time because the Weinstein Company, I think, who's putting it out, they couldn't figure out how to market it or when really to release it. And those are always, we just recorded a podcast talking about The Brothers Bloom, and that had sort of the same thing. I'm always really interested in those movies. The Adjustment Bureau was the same thing. I tend to like those movies a lot. Movies that people don't know how to market tend to be the ones that should be marketed directly towards me.
Like the last skit on SNL.
Pardon?
It's like the last sketch on SNL.
Exactly. Like they don't know
there's something good here, but we can't put it up front because we lose a lot of people in the first 30 minutes. This is for real fans.
Exactly. And I'm very excited about Lawless. I don't know when I'm going to get a chance to see it, but hopefully when it's still in theaters.
I'm here to bootleg your gin. That's my Tom Hardy in Lawless impression.
Yeah, no, I pieced that one together. Thanks. I saw this really great quiz online. Vulture posted it. It was, who said this crazy thing? Was it Shia or Tom Hardy? And it's so funny because it's just all these crazy Tom Hardy and Shia LaBeouf quotes. It's a really fun quiz. I don't know. I'm excited about September. September is the month that I get weirdly excited about because the things that will come out, I'll have no expectations for and tend to be fairly good. The American was another movie I really enjoyed a couple of years ago and had no expectations for. And I don't know. September is like sort of the one month that doesn't have blockbusters released in it anymore. Although Looper is kind of trying to change that, which bumps me out a little bit, but at least I get to see Looper. If that has to be the movie to make the transition, then so be it. But.
Well, Alex, if you're excited for September's, I've great news for you.
Yeah.
September's here.
Oh my goodness. It actually is September 1st as we're recording this, isn't it?
Fact.
Wow. Well, huzzah. anything else you feel that you need to get off your chest before we officially, as the MacGuffin Men, close the book on summer movie season?
No, vote Summer Wheatley.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you for listening to the MacGuffin Men. We're going to be putting out another podcast this week. It'll be out on Thursday. It'll be about the movie The 25th Hour, 2002 Spike Lee film starring Edward Norton. Be sure to check back for that. Tomorrow, you will be able to read something I wrote about romantic comedies. It'll be up and you can read that. We apologize for not having podcast last week, but
my fault. You should...
No, it's everybody's fault. It's America's fault.
All your faults.
Don't blame our listeners, James.
You said everybody.
Well, then you turned it on them and took yourself out of it. All your faults. You know, Anyways, doesn't matter.
I'm a listener. I'm a listener too.
Let's just blame Wes Craven, and it was all in Wes Craven, and we'll just move on. So yeah, thank you for listening. Be sure to check out our website, themcguffinman.com. Follow us on Twitter at themcguffinman, and send us a tweet or something. If you see a link you think we would like, tweet it to us, and I'll check it out. Yeah, thank you for listening, and be sure to check back on Thursday for our podcast on the 25th Hour.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out our website, themcguffinmen.com, or follow us on Twitter at @themcguffinmen.